Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Carter Street Talk. Today is episode 52, so it's a very special episode for a couple of reasons. One, episode 52 was kind of my goal when I started the podcast, so it's really exciting to finally be there. And then the reason two is that we have Adam here, Adam Fong from Adam Fong Art. You guys may know him most recently from his collab with Missing, but he's also been putting out a lot of really awesome painting and graphite on paper, really a lot of artists' paintings and stuff like that on his channel, and I'm super happy to have him on the show. Adam, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Hello. I'm excited.
So super excited to have Adam here. I've been a fan of his ever since Berger did a stream showcasing a custom piece that Adam had done for him. So it's a real treat for you to be here. I think what my audience would be really interested in hearing about is kind of the most recent Missing collab, just kind of how that came to be and kind of what your thoughts on it were, and potentially your thoughts going into the design of the deck. So I know that's a lot, but...
Yeah. I guess I'll sort of go chronologically, and then I'll talk more about the creative process and how, like, Leo, Nate, and I worked it out. So actually, the collaboration came about through a conversation, I think back in like late 2018. We just started texting back and forth. And that was around the time that Missing started to come up, right? That was like just before they were about to launch the brand. And they asked me if I wanted to do a collaboration potentially in 2-3 years. And I was really, really keen. So yeah, I told them, you know, give it a couple of years because I wasn't that good back then, and I didn't want to put out like bad work. Mm-hmm. And also they needed some time to actually get the ball rolling with Missing. But when it came down to it, they hit me up again around, I think, early to late January this year. And we just started talking, and then ever since then, we've been sort of working on it, and I think we concluded everything in around September, August or September. And then after that, it's just like post-production, you know, like sending the designs to the press, USPCC, sorry, and mm-hmm. All that. So in regards to the creative process, they gave me a lot of creative freedom, I think. So they only gave me prompts. Like they told me, okay, we want sort of this, like, they wanted this really weird concoction of figures, right, like with the hands and the feet and everything, and they told me I could do anything I wanted with it. So I came up with one painting, and we worked on that for like 2 months, and then we decided that it wasn't gonna cut it. It was like a diamond shaped thing, and we didn't really like it, so we kind of scrapped that and we started working on this the back design that you see now. Funny enough, we actually started working on the cords first before the back design. Tacking the cords would be better because that would give us more, that would sort of ground our direction a bit, because when you start with a back design and then you design the whole deck around that, it gets a bit myopic, like you're trying to copy everything that's on the back design. Mm-hmm. But if you design the back design around the whole deck, it's sort of, it's more eclectic, as in, like, you sort of pull elements from, I don't know, like, this card, and you pull elements from the Joker, and you sort of put it all into the back design, and it feels more wholesome and holistic, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. And what you see with that, too, is, like, the individual face cards, you have different colors with blue, green, red, that don't really show up on the back design, but it's still the same theme, and it's still the same style throughout. So you do get some like visual variety and just not only the faces, but in the coloring as well, because of what you guys did. I think it's really interesting. I would like to know personally with the back design, if like the face and hand kind of glob was made first and then the missing kind of smoke was added, or was the missing like word always going to be there?
So, actually, the whole concept of the deck, like gesture playing cards, we wanted to really accentuate gesture. It's a really abstract concept, not visually, but just like metaphorically, because you can't really draw gesture, right? You can only suggest it. So we felt that having a strong graphic contrast with traditional painting would be quite interesting. So if you see like the cards, let me, you know, you have like these bits here. That was all actually done with collage. So I painted the feet and the hands, and then I painted paper and I kind of like stuck it on to the canvas. And that's sort of the same with this. So what I did was I painted the whole back design, and then after that, we worked out a design for the collage, and then I cut it on paper and I stuck it onto the thing.
Interesting. Cool.
Yeah.
And, you got to obviously work with Missing, which is, super awesome. I'm sure it's a dream for a lot of people, especially in the cardistry community. One thing we wanted, you kind of wanted to talk on was how you kind of interact with the cardistry community now, since, I would assume you're not as active because you're kind of focusing on your art, but how do you kind of interact with the community now?
I mean, you know, I used to do a bunch of cardistry, and then I sort of stepped down from that. Now I do painting. I think where I stand in the community now, I'm much more of a layman, right? Like I'm like an ex-cardist, because I don't consider myself a cardist because I don't actively create. I do cardistry, but I'm not contributing anything to the art form, but what I do contribute are products, right? So like I am working with Missing on this collaboration, and I have like another collaboration next year that I'm really excited to announce. I can't really say what it is yet, but it's going to be good. So I see myself as sort of a Benji Taylor kind of figure, right? Where, you know, he used to do cardistry and then he started designing cardistry contexts and eventually just did his own thing. And I think that's where I see myself right now. I think it's quite wholesome because despite me not actually contributing anything to cardistry, I still feel very welcome by the community. I don't think, in fact, I feel actually closer despite that distance. One reason being, I think, is because I'm able to see cardistry without the eyes of because, you know, when you're creating cardistry, you're always looking for problems, you're problem solving, but I'm not really problem solving now when I look at cardistry. I'm not saying, oh, I think that closer could be better, that opener could be better, and in a way I think that's, I can sort of look at it in with
enjoy it
in a fresher way more. I think
fresher, enjoy it a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
I think that's a common thing with, like, reviewers. Like, you kind of get in the habit of breaking down what's wrong with something, and then you don't necessarily enjoy the move or whatever you're watching. So I can definitely see how, like, stepping away from it for a while and not necessarily having that pressure would allow you to enjoy something more. I think what's interesting, too, is how to use, kind of say, you're contributing to cardistry even though you're not making moves and stuff like that. I think that's a pretty common thing. When people kind of focus on other aspects of cardistry besides making moves, like they're still contributing to cardistry, but they can't focus on the moves. Like for me, I can't like focus on creating moves as much because I do this podcast. So like I might be able to make more moves, but that's just, it's just a time thing. So like when you do other things, like, it doesn't necessarily mean it's not contributing. It's just, it's contributing in a different way that most people don't. Cause most people are just narrowly focused on like, we got to create, we got to make some new moves, you know? Cause that's how most people think for better or worse in the community. So you've kind of described the creative process for the back design here. I would like to know a little bit more about your creative process when you try to make cardistry moves or when you have made cardistry moves in the past, because this is a topic I like to kind of look at a lot on the podcast pretty much every episode. So for you, do you have any process or have you had any process when going to create a move?
I'm going to try to recall because it's been like 4 years since I last made the move, but I remember it being a really, really tedious process. I mean, like, like Leo can tell you, my God. Because I remember I took at least like 4 to 5 months to work on a single move because I wouldn't consider myself a perfectionist, but I'm very myopic. So I tend to like have tunnel vision a lot. So if I'm doing an opener, I want every single facet of that opener to make sense within the larger context of the move. And I think that's like a blessing and a curse because there's a lot of refinement, but then sometimes you stray too far away from the original intention and just create something completely different. I wouldn't say I have like a standardized way of creating moves. What's really funny is that usually I'll just be doing combos, right? And then I'll accidentally do something that will sort of spark an open on the close, and then I'll branch off from that. And the whole move will revolve around that, I find. I think all of my moves have been created like that, actually. I don't think I've actually sat down and said, okay, I'm going to create an open up or a close or a move.
Mm-hmm. It's like creating a move from scratch is like an extremely hard thing to do. I think it what is. You see and like what you say here is like something that happens to a lot of people where you almost make a mistake in what you were planning to do and you're like, oh, that was actually really cool. How did I do that? How do I redo that or repurpose that? So it's almost kind of funny in a way how a lot of us create moves through failure of what we were originally trying to do. And then there's always that super common feeling of like you do something and then you can't figure out what you did. And that's always super frustrating. But speaking of moves, the one that most recently was showed off from you was Bianca Jagger. So yes. I would like to know a little bit about how that came to be named and how that just came to be in general, if you have any insights on that.
So I created the move for Packet a Packet, which was this video I did in 2017, and it came out early 2018. Kevin Carlson actually shot and edited it. We shot in London. I think at the time, I really wanted a comfy move. I think at some point, every artist just wants their go-to move. And I didn't really have one yet. So it sort of started off as this very, very basic opener, you know, that I actually stole it from Gizmo. I think Patrick does that, right? And I think I just sort of branched out from there. I think what's really interesting about it, though, is how it got its name. So at the time, I was reading a lot of stories from Studio 54, which was this like really extravagant nightclub in the 70s in New York. And Bianca Jagger, who was Mick Jagger's then wife, was always attending these parties. And I thought, she looks really cool. So I'm just going to name my move after her. I think, yeah, it's... I don't think I had any idea what I was doing, but looking back, I think it was a pretty smart decision because so many people always ask me, like, oh, like, why is it called Bianca Jagger? And I just said, yeah, it's a person. And, you know, they end up looking her up. And it's also, like, this cross, like, pollination of art forms. So you have, like, fashion and music influencing, like, artistry and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's... That's good naming too, because like you said, it kind of encompasses some of your others, where your cartistry has flown from. I can't talk right now, but that's a really interesting story. When we were talking before, you asked whether we were going to be talking about the move or the person. I didn't know it was a person, so obviously it's good at getting people to find out about Bianca Jagger. For whether that's good or bad, I don't know. So whenever I do an interview, I always post to my stories asking what people would like to hear about. And one of the questions that I got was if you had any pet peeves when looking at moves or any pet peeves when kind of examining a move. So what are your kind of thoughts on that?
So I think the one thing that sort of icks me about moves is when a move doesn't have intention. So like when the execution is improper and it strays way too far from the intention. And I think what I mean by this is when you don't see anything happening. You know, it's sort of like a very, very mindless manipulation of cards. So, you know, things are happening, cards are moving, packets are closing and opening, but there isn't any real impact. I think, and this isn't like a rule, but it is for me. Like when I create a move, I tend to try to create the move and revolve it around one moment. I think that's a very easy way to compose a move, right? Because it's all about design, like the way you design a move. So I think really bland design bothers me.
Yeah. And I think too, I mean, it's really hard to create something with purpose a lot of times, but definitely the best moves have, like you say, a kind of focus point, whether it be in the middle where everything's building up to one moment, or whether the whole thing is just very similar in theme. Like you said, it's just trying to design a move is really important if you want to make something that is long lasting and substantial, which is easier said than done for sure. I'm sure you can attest to, but it is yeah. interesting when you see something that might be very impressive to a layman, but to like us, for our viewing standards, isn't like as impressive because there is no kind of theme or focus. So like, for example, like a lot of display moves, I would say might fit that bill.
I don't think so. I think I have to disagree because like, okay, let's take like the spring, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a really universal move and impresses almost every layman, but to a cardist, it's just normal. But if you think about it, the spring is such a beautifully designed move because the open and the closer and like the climax of the move, it's really just abbreviated into this one gesture. It's just, it's just that. And I think that cuts through all of the fat and just gets to the meat of the move. It's the spring. I think that's like a really, really beautiful move. And I think I'm only able to see that now because I don't do cardistry. Because when I used to do cardistry, I used to get so worked up about, oh, like how does this packet combine with that? But now I'm able to see like the bigger picture. And I think I tend to appreciate these, I guess, like layman moves a bit more.
Mm-hmm. And I think what I was getting at is more so like the kind of skeletal structure building that some people will do, especially early on, where they're just like, oh, let's add a card here, to where we just have this huge.
Yeah. Thing.
But that's where my mind was kind of going with that. Obviously, the spring is incredible. And like even moves like that we kind of don't think much about now. At some point when we first saw that spring, like we were like, oh, this is absolutely insane. I need to learn this, or like flicker shot or bullet, stuff like that. At one point, mantra, those were like ground changing for us, but it just kind of got normalized over time. So now we kind of like focus on such small things because we already have that base ground knowledge. But yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like some of the classic moves like spring and like anaconda, stuff like that, like you said, it just cuts straight down right to the meat, right to the core of what's impressive and what's nice. And when I was talking with Jack in the past, he always has said like people always focus on combining mechanics, and he says, what does like the mechanics what do the mechanics add up to, basically? What do they add up to instead of just mindlessly combining stuff? Like, how do we get to the core meat, like you were saying? So I definitely think there's some stuff to be taken away from that.
100%. And I think, I hope I don't treat you off topic. I think I've only learned that because I paint. Because I was actually talking to Patrick and Franco about this, but I mean, cardistry and painting are very, very similar in the sense that you are designing and composing to suggest form, right? And I think everything you do has to be conducive to what you want to display to the viewer. And so, what you said about that thing, you know, where like people sort of add a card here and they add a card there and they eventually come up with like a 15 card display. I think that's actually what I was getting at too. I agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm. And have you found like either cardistry or painting kind of in the other? So like, have you ever been painting and you found like, oh, I'm bringing this aspect from cardistry, or you're making a cardistry move and you're like, oh, I've taken something from painting. Like, do you feel like you've taken things from your other hobbies when doing them?
Yeah, definitely. I think because I do work very eclectically, so I always am looking for different things that I can steal from. And I use the word steal very, very broadly, because I steal, not in a sense where I'm like, I'm shoplifting, but I'm sort of taking things that I like. But I think with cardistry in particular, I think that thing about intent ties back into the way I paint, because, like if you look at some of my paintings, the way I compose, it's very focused. I always just have like one thing to say with a painting, and I try to, design the image so that it reads, also that one thing I want to say reads very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's much like how I made moves, you know, like that there was one moment in the move that I wanted to really emphasize on, and everything else revolved around that.
Mm-hmm. I think we see that too in your paintings. Obviously, a lot of times it's portraits or photos of hands or feet. So I definitely think that there's always a kind of focus in your work, a very clear and apparent focus on what the focus is. So it's interesting to see that kind of drawn from cardistry. Real quickly, I just want to like kind of highlight the kind of not shoplifting, but taking bits and pieces from other influences. I think that's a key in the creative process and really important from all the talks that I've done. Kevin Ho did like an article called Steal Like a Cardist, which is kind of taking a bit from Steal Like an Artist. So I'll link that in the description if you guys want to kind of look more into that topic, if you're listening. I think that's something that people could gain a lot of insight from, because it's definitely everything we do is inspired by something else, whether we realize it or not. And whether it's subconscious or conscious, we're constantly taking bits and bobs from other aspects of our life, and our brain is kind of rationalizing it into what we do. So it's a very interesting topic, and I just want to highlight that. Do you have anything that you want to add as it pertains to taking influences from different places?
Yeah, I think I can't remember who said this to me, but I read this somewhere definitely. It said that we are just a product of our influences. And I think that's really interesting, because the more you think about it, everything you do is dictated by something you've seen, heard, or listened to. Seen or heard, yeah. And I think it really comes through when you're making art, during the creative process, especially when you're problem solving. Right, because like doing something creative, it's really just problem solving. You're problem solving with cards or with paint or with graphite solves that. And I think every decision you make has to come from somewhere. You don't make a move. You don't do something because you want to. You do something because you've seen it, I think, in my opinion and in my experience at least. Like every painting I've done, it's just a response to another painting I've seen. So if I see, a rubric from Kaufman, and I look at that composition, his compositions, I'm like, okay, I want to kind of do something like that. And I think it's eventually you sort of blend all of these influences and approaches and styles and manners of working that you sort of come through at the end. So I think the creative process is like this thing of fat, and you're sort of like cutting through it in the end. That's like the meat.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a really visceral way to describe it, but I think that's like the best way I can.
No, I think there's definitely some good stuff to be drawn from that. I think too, when you say, one thing we can do to kind of get to that meat is kind of surround ourselves with the things that we really enjoy or we think have a lot of value. Whatever we kind of surround ourselves with is going to input our output. Is that a good word? But it's going to affect our output. Whatever we surround ourselves is going to affect what we put out. So like, if you want to be a really good cardist, then it's a really good thing to surround yourself with really good cardists, either persons or media, just surrounding yourself in the culture. Or for you, if like, I'm sure there are a lot more ways to draw from art because there's way more artists in the world. But just surrounding yourself with the art that you really enjoy and kind of taking bits and bobs from that. So it's really important to surround yourself with the things that you love, I think, if you want to create something that similarly. I think what's really interesting too, I think of like Van Gogh, is when someone is surrounded potentially by things that they don't like and then still create something beautiful out of that. Like there's something super special about that as well. But I think for most people aren't Van Gogh and can't like make beauty out of really, really dark stuff. And if you can, like that's a gift. Maybe not for you, but for others.
Yeah.
So I think we talked on a lot of really good stuff, the missing collab and everything. That was very exciting for the community, and getting to talk to you has been a real pleasure. Towards the end of the show, I like to do what I call roll out the close-up pad. And basically, that's just my way of saying, is there anything that you would like to promote or any last nugget you would like to leave the audience with before we kind of wrap things up?
I guess, like, I have, like, my art on my Instagram page, but there is a collaboration coming up next year that I'm just really, really excited for. And I've been waiting for too long to keep this in, and I think it's going to be something big. Like for me and also for the community, I think it's going to be cardistry related, obviously. So I think just like, look out for that.
Yeah. So as always, I'll have linked to Adam's stuff in the description if you want to check it out. Be excited for whatever is coming up. Clearly Adam's very excited about it. So that's a good sign. Hopefully you guys gained some knowledge and had some fun listening to the podcast. I know I did, and that'll wrap up the episode. Adam, thanks for being here. And
thank you so much.
See you guys later. Yeah, no problem.
Thank you.